How Civil Wars Start and How to Stop Them. In it, you outline something you've known for a while. What is the recipe for a civil war? What are some of the things that that seem to be in place whenever this happens?
Yeah, so I've been studying civil wars for over 30 years, and it turns out we have an amazingly large amount of data on this subject. We have data on who starts these wars, what are the conditions under which they start, how long they last, what you need to actually end them. And it turns out that two factors are the most predictive of countries that experience a civil war. And they're not the factors that most people would think. The first is something that political scientists call anocracy. That is just a fancy term for a partial democracy. Civil wars overwhelmingly happen in countries that are neither fully democratic nor fully autocratic. There's something in between. So full, healthy democracies like the United States used to be, those countries don't experience civil war. But interestingly enough, full autocracies, the most authoritarian countries, also don't tend to experience civil wars. The violence tends to happen in this middle zone. And the second factor is something that we call ethnic factionalism. And that is just a fancy term for countries whose political parties divide along identity lines and not around ideology. So rather than having, rather than citizens choosing whether to join a political party based on whether they're a communist or a capitalist or a conservative or a liberal, they choose to join a political party based on whether they are a Serb, a Croat, a Sunni, a Shiite, a Muslim, a Christian, or somebody who's white or black. So when a country has those two features, it's a partial democracy whose political parties have come down to sort of this you know, no-holds-barred identity politics, those are the countries that tend to experience civil war.
Chapter 3, The Dark Consequences of Losing Status. We hear that often. President Trump used it a lot in before 2016 to get elected. But Republicans have sort of glommed onto it, too, in general. Just that Republicans are now a minority and they're being oppressed.
Yes. So this is another thing that we know from the vast amount of data that we have and that we've analyzed. We know who tends to start civil wars, especially wars that break down along ethnic or religious lines, which if a violence were to break out here in the United States, it would break down along ethnic and religious lines. It's not the groups that you think. It's not the poorest groups in society. It's not the groups that are most discriminated against. It's certainly not immigrants in different countries. These groups all have deep grievances. They don't like the status quo. They would like to see the status quo change, but they don't have the capacity to do anything about it. They're just struggling to survive. The groups that tend to start these wars are the groups that had once been politically, economically, and socially dominant but are in decline. So these are the groups that are used to having power. These are the groups who believe that the country actually belongs to them, that the identity of the country should be their religion, that the holidays that are celebrated should be their religious holidays, the holidays that they care about, the language that the country speaks should be their language. And when they see that begin to change, they feel extremely threatened. They feel extremely resentful, and they feel this loss of status deeply. And it's that loss that motivates them to begin to try to maintain control using whatever means they can.
Tell us about the Polity Project, and I'm saying it right, P-O-L-I-T-Y, the Polity Project, and then we're going to scare the audience. I want the U.S. Polity score.
Yeah. So the U.S. government has a task force. It's been around since 1994. It's called the Political Instability Task Force. And the goal of the task force, or one of the goals, it has many goals, one of the goals of the task force is to help our government predict which countries around the world are likely to experience political instability and political violence within the next 2 years. I served on that task force from 2017 to the end of 2021, and they have a predictive model, and that's where we discovered that autocracy and ethnic factionalism, these two factors, put countries at what we considered high risk of instability and or violence. So that government task force is not allowed to study the United States. We never discussed the United States. We talked a lot about what was happening in countries in Africa, in the Middle East, in Central Asia, in South America, but we never talked about the United States. And of course, had we been allowed to do that, we would have seen how these two features, autocracy and factionalism, were emerging here in our own country. So the data that the task force compiles data from all different sources. One of their sources is called the Polity Project, and it's run out of the Center for Systemic Peace in Virginia. And what the Polity Project does is every year it analyzes every country in the world based on how democratic and how autocratic it is, and it assigns that country a number from negative 10 to positive 10. Negative 10 means that you have all authoritarian features. So you are the most autocratic type of government in the world. This is where Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, North Korea are located. Positive 10 is you are an extremely strong democracy. This is where everybody would like to be, or all democratic countries citizens would like to be. These are the Denmark, the Switzerland, Canada, Australia. They're all positive tens. The United States was a positive 10 up until 2016. In 2016, the Polity Project downgraded the United States from positive 10 to a positive, I think it was a positive 9. And that was because international election observers deemed the 2016 elections free but not entirely fair, in large part because the Russians had actually interfered in our elections. The Polity Project downgraded the United States again in 2019 to a positive 7. And it did that because we had the executive branch, the White House, refusing to comply with requests for information from Congress and refusing to address subpoenas. Now, that might not seem like a big deal to your listeners, but it actually is a big deal because the main check on executive power, the main check on the White House, is Congress. And if the White House basically thumbs its nose at what Congress asks it to do, that means we kind of have a rogue executive branch. And our founding fathers were worried about that. If we were to have a king in this country, it would happen in the White House. And then it was downgraded again by the end of 2020. It went to a positive 5 for the first time since 1800. And it was downgraded again because we had a sitting president who was refusing to accept the results of an election and was attempting to overturn those results. Now, positive 5 is significant because autocracies, by the definition used by the task force, are countries that fall between negative 5 and positive 5. This is the beginning of the middle zone. And so as I'm sitting on the task force and we're talking about all these other countries, I'm watching the Polity Project downgrade our democracy. And I knew that if we had been allowed to study the United States, we would have seen not only that we were becoming a partial democracy, but that our political parties were also increasingly being defined by race and religion and not by ideology. And the task force, if we had been looking at the United States, would have put it at high risk of instability and violence starting in December of 2020.
How can we prevent civil war?
Well, I'll tell you the most obvious way, but it's also hard and it's uncertain at this point. The most obvious way is to strengthen our democracy. Full, healthy democracies don't experience civil war. There are a whole series of very undemocratic features that the United States has that other democracies like the Scandinavian countries and the countries of Western Europe and Canada and Australia do not have. They do not have things like the filibuster, gerrymandering, the influence of enormous sums of money in politics. They don't have the Electoral College that disproportionately favors rural America. So there are all these democratic features that we know are kind of injecting extremism into our politics and leading to more and more undemocratic outcomes. So reform. But that's really hard because we saw during the Biden administration when the Democrats controlled all three branches of power, they didn't have the votes for reform. So they were unable to make any changes. Our democracy today is no stronger, no healthier than it was back on January 6, 2021. We have a president who adheres to the rule of law and who honors and respects democracy, but we're placing a lot of faith and trust and importance on an individual willing to honor our system as opposed to the system itself being able to maintain itself. And then ethnic factions. Our big political parties need to reach across racial, religious, and ethnic lines. The Republican Party is now overwhelmingly white and evangelical Christian in a country that is increasingly multi-ethnic, multi-racial, and multi-religious. That is the definition of an ethnic faction. And that is not healthy for this country. But those are hard to do, and it's not clear that the parties have incentives to change, at least not at this point. I think the simplest solution is actually to regulate social media. we saw the effect that deplatforming Trump had. It suddenly sort of ratcheted down the tension in this country. And when I say regulate social media, I don't mean content. Let people put whatever they want on social media. Do not in any way interfere with their First Amendment rights. But what we should regulate is the algorithms and the recommendation engines that are consciously selecting out the most incendiary, the most emotional material and pushing out that content to an enormous audience. And they're doing that because psychologically human beings tend to be attracted to engage with, and to consume at higher levels material that causes them to feel fearful, angry. That's what keeps them on their devices, and that's the business model of the big tech companies. So don't restrict speech, but there's this great quote by Asa Rafkin, who is a co-founder of this fantastic website called the Center for Ethical Technology, and I encourage all your listeners to go there. They talk about what could be done about social media. And just as an aside, he's a relatively young guy. He was in the tech business before he retired at an early age. He was the guy who discovered continuous scrolling. So he understands the technology behind it. And the quote that I'll leave you with on this is from him. And he says, freedom of speech is not freedom of reach. And social media and tech companies should not be allowed to take information that we know is creating different types of societal harm and do whatever they want with it.
All right. Bucknell University graduate Barbara Walter graduated in 1986. Your parents were immigrants to the U.S., Republicans most of their lives. Your dad was in World War II Germany at the time. He remembers what Hitler did. That provided some motivation to you when he would tell you stories about what happened then. That provided some motivation to you, and he was very worried. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, it started in early 2016, right after Trump announced his candidacy. Nobody was taking Trump seriously, and Trump terrified my dad. And he was not a man who scared easily. He just saw things in Trump, in his personality, in his rhetoric, in his strategy that reminded him of 1930s Germany. When I would go home, all he wanted to do was to talk about what was happening. And he said, oh my gosh, I never thought I would see this here in America, and I'm seeing it happening again. And at first, I actually didn't take him seriously. I said, Dad, it's going to be fine. American democracy it's been around for hundreds of years. Our institutions are strong. Americans know what democracy is all about. They're not going to let people take away this incredible government that we have. And my dad didn't agree. He said, no, I didn't think it would happen in Germany, and I watched it happening. And this is a guy who knows how to play the game. And this is a guy who doesn't want democracy. And people, Americans, don't understand the warning signs. And he's going to trick them, basically. As 2016 went along, and you started to see Trump, you know, catapult in the polls, and then eventually win the election, I realized that my dad understood something that I didn't understand, and that we needed to pay closer attention to the warning signs. And so the book really is about what do we know about what are the warning signs, the red flags of increasing instability and political violence and civil war, and let's lay it out really clearly for the American public so that we aren't taken by surprise, so that we aren't naive and thinking that we're somehow immune from bad outcomes, because we're not immune.
Barbara F. Walter, Rohrer Professor of International Affairs at the School of Global Policy and Strategy at the University of California, San Diego, author of How Civil War Starts and How to Stop Them, speaking at Bucknell University Tuesday night, 7:30 in Vaughan Literature Building in Trout Auditorium. Barbara, thank you so much for your time and all your insights and information. Thank you for writing this book. I hope a lot of people read it and proceed to help improve our democracy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for this conversation. I really appreciate it.